too.
You know, I just wish Seattle had a basketball team again, but we won't. Yeah. We won't. We're talking farmers markets, not my broken heart.
Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
All right. Welcome back to this episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast, where my guest today is Jordan Bolt. Jordan, your official title is?
Technically, I'm the executive director at the Vancouver Farmers Market in Vancouver, Washington.
Awesome. So I could joke because your dog's with you, but what does that mean? What is your day-to-day duty? How's that?
Boy, I wish there was a way to really put that in a nice, neat box. I mean, ultimately, I fill the role of an executive director at any nonprofit. So I'm the chief executive of our organization. So I work under, you know, a volunteer board of directors that's a mix of members of our organization as well as community members at large. And my job is, you know, largely to manage the day-to-day operations of an organization like ours, finance and management and staff and those different details, as well as ensure that we're pursuing our strategic initiatives and doing all those things that nonprofits do. Okay. So obviously that's what I do. Practically speaking, we work at a farmer's market that has a totally, you know, physical and sort of ongoing like workload that is under-resourced and over-needed. And so that means that I do all of those jobs and I also take out the trash. And I fix our work truck and change the oil and, you know, deal with that when's needed. I fixed a window in our office, put new glass in a window in our office on Monday. All these different things. So sort of other duties as assigned is a big part of my job.
So when you applied for the job, did they ask you if you knew how to change a tire? I mean, was that part of it?
But I'll tell you what, like the most important aspects of being a market manager traditionally, like don't show up on a job application.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing this job?
Been here since 2010.
Okay. And how long has Vancouver's farmer market?
You actually opened our market in 1990. So it's a pretty long running market.
Yeah. So before we hit record, we were talking about this. And so I'd like to hear it in your words first. Describe for our audience what you think the Vancouver's farmer's market is all about.
Yeah, it's a fun question. And no matter, you know, depending on who you ask, you get really different answers about places like this. But in my sense, the market fulfills probably three big key roles in our community that I think are really important. In no particular order, right? Like we are a business incubator. So we work with over 200 small businesses. A lot of them are food and farm. We also have an artisan contingent, so local makers, that kind of stuff. And we are focused on their success. We're giving them access to customers, supporting their business, giving them a low-cost way to start their business. So we really love entrepreneurs. We love startups. We love people that are sort of pursuing their passions and dreams, especially when they align with sort of what we're working on. We're also really focused on providing a place for our community to gather, supporting sort of the placemaking aspect of that, creating an open, safe community space that encourages not just like a healthy community, but healthy eating and supporting of local businesses. And so we see a lot of value in that. And then more and more, our work is focused on serving, I don't want to say at need populations or whatever, but we work a lot with folks who are on food assistance or who are maybe struggling with access to healthy food, working a lot with those populations, working a lot specifically like maybe non-native English speaking populations who need access to that. And then we also do a lot of advocacy work for like farmers and small businesses locally. So, so there's a lot of legs to the stool that is the farmers market.
So it's not just a bunch of stuff for us to go wander through on a Saturday. There's a lot of stuff going on here.
That's like the physical manifestation of the market. And in order to make that happen and be successful long-term, you have like an infrastructure behind it that supports it.
So the markets are on Saturdays and I've wandered through one time. I was in Vancouver and I wandered through the farmer's market, unintentionally. I mean, I was there to go look at a coffee shop and I just remember it being like, it was a pretty good sized farmer's market in my opinion. Yeah. And your website references, you know, a large number of vendors in pre-recording, but that's not as many stalls as you have on any given day.
Yeah, it's kind of a misnomer, right, in the farmers market world. So we're a membership-based organization, like you would construct a business association. So those are our members. You know, we're going to have – it's changed a little bit with COVID, but we sort of are in the low 200s usually. I think our website does say 250 right now. It's probably dropped off a little bit. But 200 to 225, 230 small businesses make up our membership every year. And that's a combination of these businesses. And they're the folks that are attending our markets. And on any given day, we have, you know, this is, we're obviously speaking during the coronavirus pandemic. And so we have all these lots and lots of regulations around how many spaces you can have and how much you have to space them apart. So we obviously had to take up some real estate to do that. But we have about 120 spaces currently in the market. And we will average, you know, we might at the end of the year, like the end of last year, we averaged like, I think like 103 spaces a day over the course of the year.
Okay.
The peak season, you know, your midsummer, you're going to see that number full. Outside of the pandemic, under normal circumstances, right, if we ever see those again, we would see in the area of like, we have about 160 spaces available.
So, that's a lot.
Yeah, on any given day. And so, and obviously, you know, we have like that 200 plus vendors, but a lot of them, you know, like raspberry farmers are coming 4 to 6 weeks a year. Some people only come once a month, that kind of thing with their schedule. So we have a lot of turnover, a lot of variance. Yeah.
So just this question just popped into my head. That's beeping you here is the bus backing over you now as I back, you know, just kidding. Saturday morning.
Yeah.
What time does things get started? And you know, the market's at 9 a.m., right?
But our market opens at 9 on Saturdays and 10 on Sundays. Yeah.
So 9 a.m., no one just showed up at 8:59 and got started. So how early is it? Walk me through the day, if you will.
It's a long day. You know, it really depends on the vendor. Some of it's based off of their personality. Some people, we close our streets at 8:30, you know, to get cars off the street because customers will show up early. But we definitely have people who are rolling at 8:25. but you know, it's, you know, our staff will show up usually between 5 and 5:30 on that morning to start opening the market. Okay. And there's already going to be a half dozen or vendors or so already at the market. They know their spaces. They're all pre-assigned. We have an interactive map, so they know where to go, and they're all marked on the street. Some of our, especially like food vendors or some of our more serious, like large farm produce vendors, their displays will take them 3-4 hours to create. And so as a result of that, to sort of set up their tables, to arrange their produce, or if they're like a restaurant, like a hot food vendor, they have to get their equipment out and get everything ready to go and start prepping things so that at 9 o'clock or probably a little bit early, right? Like they're like our hot food vendors will all cook, they'll serve breakfast to other vendors. So all the vendors are coming around at 8:30 to get breakfast from them and make a little money early on. So they got to get going early. And, you know, we don't do, a lot of markets will do this like opening bell. They have these very strict rules. Like you can't sell before, you know, you can't sell after. We don't necessarily have that rule. I'm a proponent of these businesses making money whenever and however they can, as long as they do so responsibly. And so we don't want big lines down the street early in the day or whatever. So they've sort of learned how to just open their businesses or a little early if they can and get a full sales day in.
So your staff's showing up, say, we'll just arbitrarily say 5:30.
Yeah.
And it's over at 2, right? Supposedly.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
It's over at 3.
So how long does it take? So on Saturday, some of your vendors are leaving their stuff overnight, right?
Yeah, we have security guards that staff overnight.
So they don't
have to tear their stuff down. And we have a whole new crop of vendors who will show up on Sunday who only do one day. Saturdays are a pretty popular market, as you know, for farmers market, or popular day, excuse me, for farmers markets. So Portland metro area, which we're part of, has, I don't know, 45 markets or 40 markets happening, and probably 25 or 30 of those are happening on a Saturday.
Is there that many?
Quite a few, yeah. A lot of them small. There's some really good large ones in the area. And then what'll happen is they're all only one day. And so what'll happen is a lot of those vendors who are maybe at a Saturday market in Portland or something will jump to us on a Sunday to get a second sales day in. So anyways, they'll show up on a Sunday. Sundays are much more chill because most people are already set up. They got their tents up. They just have to come and put their products back in their booths. So we start that day around 6 or 7 with vendors, you know, just one or two managers on site, not a whole team, because it's quite a bit of work to shut streets down and stuff. And we keep them shut down all weekend. And then we're here till we close at 3 again on a Sunday. And then depending on the day, depending on how many customers we had and how much trash is left over and different things like that, we are there to sort of close it down and we sweep our, you know, we're on a city street. So we are big proponents of leaving the place nicer than we found it. So we do lots of litter runs around the park and apartment buildings nearby and empty people's trash cans and sweep the streets and try to leave, sort of put the market to bed. And we're usually out of there by 6 or 7 on a Sunday night if we're lucky.
So it's an intense 2 days.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm actually, as we were speaking, I'm just in the middle of prepping some budget stuff for a finance committee meeting for our board later tonight. And, you know, when you look at staff hours, it's, you know, our staff, if they work all weekend, will put in the area of 20 to 24 hours over the course of 2 days on just per person.
Okay.
So half their work week is just those 2 days.
Right. So all these questions are, you know, like you said,
yeah,
but due to the pandemic, it's kind of,
Sure.
So what do you consider a normal day of traffic? How many people? I mean, I know you can't like get an exact head count, but I'm sure you guys have pretty good metrics.
Yeah, so we have a couple of methods we do. We there's a couple of different ways. There's obviously like all kinds of there's like data science around how you do crowd counting and tracking this kind of stuff. There's people that this is what they study. There's a couple of different methods you can use. The trick is obviously when you're doing data tracking is just to be consistent in your methodology. And so in this case, we use a system where we've done some customer surveys and we need to do some more to kind of see how the pandemic has changed shopper behavior because this will change our methodology. But in general, in the customer surveys we've done, the average customer spends approximately 30 minutes at the market. It's sort of the, obviously some people here all day, some people here a few minutes, but we're sort of landing like the 30-ish minute range, which is a nice number. And so that means that every 30 minutes we walk the whole market and we count every person. We have like a track we follow and we count all the people with like a hand clicker in the market.
Okay.
And then we use those numbers to extrapolate out what our day would be like. And we do that every 30 minutes throughout the day and we find trends and averages. And then we sort of look at our totals. Pre-pandemic, we were in the range of between, 7,000 to 8,000. Sometimes our highest day was like 17,000. Mother's Day weekend or something would be really crazy. That's per day. We had over 600,000 customers a year coming through our market pre-pandemic.
Okay.
This year, between our three markets, so we have two days downtown, and we have one in a midweek market in another part of our city. So our total customer counts at all those markets combined in 2021. Was like 220,000. So about a third of where I was pre-pandemic. Interestingly, it's still pretty solid.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, vendor sales do not show a similar reduction, which tells us that the number of customers in your market is not a direct correlation to vendor success, which is great for us to understand because that's a metric that everyone wants to talk about. And it's an important metric, how many people come to your market. But when we're in the business of driving vendor sales and supporting local, businesses, we're really interested in like growing their sales and making them successful financially. And it's great to know that we don't have to necessarily drive more people to our market as much as it's important to drive shoppers to your market.
So I'm guessing, I mean, this is just, you know, those people that were attending in 2021 were attending to buy, not because they were, I'm going to guess masks were required and, all of these things. Right. So, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So you were off. Numbers were off, but sales were relatively stable. They're definitely down.
I mean, up for some vendors, down for others. The pandemic has done interesting things to people's buying habits, of course.
Yes.
It's a great time to be a protein vendor, like a meat vendor. You can't sell enough meat right now.
You can sell all that you have. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, that's been some interesting things to watch by just sort of watch shopper behavior change a little bit. But, definitely some people are experiencing much lower years. For our market, 2019 was a banner year for everyone. It was our highest attendance. It was our highest vendor attendance. It was our highest customer attendance. It was our best year financially as an organization. And it was, many vendors banner years. And so coming off of that, it's like hard to compare. The data over the last couple of years is so fragmented, but at the end of the day, like we don't track sales data, which is something I wish we could do more of at our market, but we definitely have vendors who share their sales data with us. And it's really, really helpful to our management to understand how we can better serve and help our vendors be successful.
Okay.
But a sort of real like real unofficial metric is we just track vendor retention. And so we assume that if a vendor's continuing to come back for 30 or 40 days a year, they're not losing money.
That's a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah, to a point, right? And so obviously there's going to be up days and down days, but at the end of the day, they continue to, the market is worth their time. There's lots of avenues to be selling. There's lots of sales channels right now. You know, if they're still at the market, which is in many ways a really hard way to make a living as a food business because of all the setup and the teardown and all the things that have to happen, it's clearly worth their time. And so we're encouraged by that.
How many people does it take to put on, let's just say the weekend, the Saturday, Sunday market, how many, you mentioned staff and hours, how many people is work are working during that?
12 staff, some of which are full-time, and we have many who just are seasonal, like weekend work. So we have some maintenance folks who just do trash and sort of pick up stuff around the market. We have a couple parking lots that we lease that we will just to secure parking for customers on the weekend that we can control. And so we have like high school kids we'll hire that'll sort of work our parking lots and be parking lot attendants, that kind of stuff. But it's about 12 people and probably between 6 to 8 volunteers in addition to that every weekend that are filling shifts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It'll reduce a little bit with COVID as COVID regulations ease. There was a point where we had to rope off our entire market, which is like over 100,000 square feet of space. And we had to rope it off and or not 100,000, sorry, about 15,000 square feet of space, but still a lot of space.
Yeah.
2.5 city blocks. And we got to rope it all off and control entrances and exits to maintain occupancy in the market and have to count all the customers. So it was really arduous to be policing that and having staff running around because people were ripping down ropes and ducking under things. And, you know, there's just a lot of that. As some of those regulations are easing, we're able to sort of run the market a little more efficiently.
Okay.
Yeah.
What you said, Mother's Day weekend, that makes a lot of sense.
Famous farmer's market day weekend.
Yeah, right? That makes a lot of sense.
If you're a flower vendor, that's how you're paying for your year right
there. The whole year is right there in that weekend. Yeah.
A lot of them will do a month's worth of revenue in a day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So earlier on, I jokingly say Portland's dead to me because it's not in Washington State, but I'll be, you know, that's just tongue in cheek. But Vancouver's just across the river. So, you know, you are just like your Bellevue to Seattle. I mean, you're just, you can't talk about Vancouver and not talk about Portland. Right. But you said there's approximately 45 markets in the Portland metro area. Approximately.
Yeah. That's the most recent number I've seen. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like the metro area, what is that in your opinion? What does that entail?
It's pretty big, but for those familiar with the area, it's going to be like obviously Portland, Vancouver, Beaverton, Hillsboro, Oregon City, Gresham. Okay. Kind of that area. It's I don't even know what the population of that is. It's somewhere in the, I want to say 2.5 million range or something.
I don't know, but I wouldn't say you were wrong. Let's put it that way. It seems reasonable. What other markets are there on the Washington side of the Columbia? Is that part of the metro area that we're including too?
Totally. Yeah. So we consider ourselves in that area. We're definitely considered part of the Portland metro area, even though we're in Washington here. And like I say, I'm looking out my office window at downtown Portland right now. So that's how close it is. Right. So,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's, So in Clark County, there's a number of smaller markets that have been around for a long time that are doing really well. Camas Farmers Market. Camas is an up and coming city on the east side of Clark County. It's a really cool area and they have a great little market. Salmon Creek Farmers Market they both run midweek markets.
Okay.
Salmon Creek is a neighborhood that's just north of Vancouver. And so it's sort of the county, like the unincorporated area, but it's a pretty populated area just north of us.
Okay.
And then like there's a town called Battleground and the town called Ridgefield. They both have had small markets off and on. That Ridgefield sort of happens with some frequency, and then our markets. So there's about five or so markets happening on this side of the river.
Okay.
That I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's when you said 45, that was like, wow,
Portland, I think, you know, this is not, this is sort of a spitball in here, but I think I say like the Portland Farmers Market system that is like the formal organization, Portland Farmers Market, their most famous market is PSU downtown. It's just a phenomenal, large, like nationally known market. It is, but they also run, I think, want to say 5 or 6 other neighborhood markets during the week and throughout the year. And so they're going to be a 5 to 7, market organization.
Okay.
Beaverton Market runs a few markets in Beaverton, you know, and then there's a number of neighborhood markets that are sort of one-offs that have popped up around town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Is this just all this conversation just sparks all sorts of questions. Sure. Like, I want to phrase this so that it's not awkward. Well, I'll phrase it awkwardly and then you help me out. Is the city of Vancouver good to work with? And I mean that in the sense of, because you're going to be blocking off streets and things like that.
Yeah.
How was that received when you guys, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. You know, I mean, the city's great to work with. The city is we're still a relatively small town, right? It's like we still sort of function like a small city, even though we're rapidly growing. I don't know if we're the fastest growing city in the state, but we're up there.
You're up there.
It's just especially downtown. Downtown is a really, you know, downtown Vancouver is weird in that it is geographically, it's located in sort of a weird spot in our city. So the city of Vancouver is sort of narrow and wide. Short and wide. And so I don't want to say it's like 7 miles tall or something if you look at it on a map, but it's like 15 miles wide. And so what's interesting is we sort of follow the Columbia River, right? Mm-hmm. Vancouver is at the far west end of our city limits, sort of the southwest corner of Southwest Washington.
Okay.
What happens is the majority of the city is north and east of us, significantly to the east of us. And so even though it's our quote unquote city center, it's not the center of our formal city. Okay. So like it's been interesting, right? So like the centers of energy and how energy flows in and around our quote unquote city limits has been a little different. And we are on the I-5 corridor. Downtown is, we have two major highways going through 205 and I-5 run through our city in sort of different sides. And so kind of bisect our city in a couple of different ways. But as a result of that, downtown Vancouver for many, many years has not necessarily been a thriving place.
Okay.
It's been, it's gone through like a lot of small downtowns, gone through its urban issues, and continues to have some new emerging issues with like houseless populations and some of that kind of stuff, vandalism, those kind of things. But for a long time, downtown Vancouver was predominantly a Monday through Friday city. So businesses and offices, it's the county seat, right? So there's the courthouse, there's the sheriff's office, the jail, like all the law offices, mm-hmm. and all the businesses associated with that. City office, so the county has their headquarters downtown, the city has a headquarters downtown, so in the federal buildings downtown, so all the government offices and the legal offices. Saturdays and Sundays, it was pretty dead down here when I joined. And I joined in 2010, coming out of recession, pretty rough time for a city like ours. In the years since, it has really taken off. Our waterfront is really been developed. A lot of private money is coming in. The restaurant food scene is really taking off. Our downtown association is really thriving. And through all of that, the market, especially early on, was coming out of the recession. We were like the only thing downtown. It was really important. The market was actually, this is probably a lot more information than you want, but this is before my time, but We're in a park called Esther Short Park. It's not where the market started. We started east of here a couple blocks. We moved to Esther Short Park in, I think, 2020.
Okay.
About 10 years after we were founded. It was part of this big redevelopment. Esther Short Park was actually a park I grew up in as a kid. It looks totally different now, but it was kind of a rough part of town. It was a park that has sort of been taken over by sort of some undesirable elements in our community and lots of drug trafficking and stuff happening there, whatever. So they redeveloped it. They really cleared a lot of the brush out. They put some play structures in. They put a big hardscape in. Burgerville, mm-hmm. which is a really well-known like sort of fast food chain here in Southwest Washington and a Washington Vancouver-based thing. The founder of that passed away, but he had donated a good chunk of money to build like a square, like a town square here. And so we built Prop to Square, and then we built the market. We put the market around it, and they built the street for the market, one of our streets. We put power and water in the streets so vendors could have access to utilities, which is super rare and really, really special for a market like ours.
Yeah.
Everyone comes to our market. Other market managers come, and they're like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. Like, it's
power.
It's pretty great. As a result of that, and that was all part of, like, the police chief, I believe, and the mayor at the time, who was really forward-thinking, this guy named Royce Pollard, and it was like a really great way, and I think our police chief at the time sort of said this, like a really great way to combat some of the crime that was happening here. He's like, you don't arrest away this problem. He's like, but a great way to combat this is like moms and strollers, because, you know, when you sort of shine a light on crime, it sort of shrivels in light. And so he was, you know, they were like, let's activate this park. Let's get this place busy on the weekends when there's art, when there's not business going downtown, hence the farmer's market. And we kind of helped reclaim this part of downtown, sort of planned our flag, and sort of the rest is history.
Okay.
Finish your talk, to finish your conference, to sort of finish your question though, what's interesting though, is we run into this interesting situation as we come into 2020, where 2020, 2021 and on, we're seeing significant growth taking place in our community, lots of private development, lots of money coming in, lots of residential, which is new, which brings with it a whole new set of issues and challenges. And so as our town gets denser, it's harder to shut down streets. People are less inclined to want streets shut down. They're not sure how to drive around the market and all the challenges and the businesses that come down here and the trash and the people and all the things that just that come with a large scale gathering.
Right.
And so it's a constant conversation. And it's, I wouldn't say it's a constant tension, but it's on everyone's mind, is like, how do we manage that? The market's pretty important to the city. It was really important during the last recession as a business incubator and an activator, like a outside safe public space downtown. Mm-hmm. It becomes, it feels, markets, I think, in general, feel less important during boom times, but they become vitally important during busts. And we, you know, we're really, we're also markets, not just us. I think all markets are, we're sort of somewhat counter-cyclical in our success. And so while when economies are struggling, markets can often be thriving. We see, you know, we saw with our last recession, we saw a real rise in sort of the buy local movement nationally. We saw a real, as people were losing jobs, we see a natural growth in entrepreneurship. We see a natural growth in people sort of being forced out of maybe things they didn't, positions they don't want to be in, and getting to pursue their dreams. You have a number of vendors in our market who are making full-time livings here, who lost their jobs in their last recession and took a flyer on a dream and have landed here and have made it really successful. So markets are one of the things that is really important to economic success during a downturn, because we support sort of that segment of the population.
Excellent. Excellent answer.
Kind of long-winded, but I hope.
No. See, this is.
Hope you got some interesting stuff there.
No, absolutely. You're this is just great content.
It's good, and like I say, it's a hard conversation to have with developers and city officials, because that doesn't always resonate with them, because it's not a direct flashy thing like a brand new skyscraper or whatever. There's this sort of slow constant to markets that's not as sexy as sometimes they want to see during boom times. That's sort of our, like, but that's sort of, we're sort of the low, like the slow and steady wins the race. Our consistency over the course of 30 plus years is what leads to this long-term community health, is sort of our stance on it.
How do people go about, okay, so walk me through, I want to be a vendor.
Yeah,
we're in the middle of this right now. I want to sell my widget. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I love coffee, so I want to sell coffee.
Great.
I want to sell my wood-fired coffee, roasted coffee.
Great.
How do I go about? Because I just can't show up on Saturday and sell my coffee.
No, not at all. Yeah, we have a process for that. We're in the middle of this literally as we speak. We've largely broken our market into three categories. This is how we handle it. Other markets do this differently. I don't actually know that I love our system, but it's the system that's been around for a long time, so we're kind of working in it. So what we do is we break our market into three categories. We have farmers, agriculture-based vendors. Those would obviously be agriculture products, but also things like meat, fish, cheese, dairies, all that kind of stuff. Then we have what we call like food vendors. Those could be like a hot food, like someone who's cooking, you know, falafel at the market or pizza or whatever they're doing, like a small restaurant trying to get started, or a food truck. And it also includes what you call like artisan food or packaged food. So hot sauces, bakeries, coffee, things like that.
Okay.
And then we have a third category for artisans. These are makers, woodworkers, potters, people like that who do sort of like, who are creators and makers in our community. And we're working to sort of, we're unique. Most markets don't work with them in the farmer's market world, but we do. And so that's sort of something that sets us apart. We have three different categories of vendors, and we have three committees that are overseen by staff, board, and other members of our community who sort of volunteer on those three committees. And they're sort of subject matter experts. So on our food committee, we have a staff member. We have some board members who are also food vendors and have experience in that industry. We also have like some local chefs on that. We have a guy from the local culinary school, a teacher from local culinary school, and they just sort of assess that. And so what happens is we're right now just taking open applications. And so vendors can apply. We usually are applying December through December and January. Applications are open for the coming year. We shut them off on February 1st. And then you submit your application. You have an online form that you submit that through. And it's called a company called Management Market. Most markets are working with them now in the area. So it's just a site that collates this information. They send off their application to us. And then what we do is we look through that. We can sort of take a first look. And if you are qualified, meaning you are making your product, you're sourcing your product in a way that fits our requirements, you are you're the type of vendor that we want in our market. We have a lot of resellers. We have a lot of people who are trying to get in with like, hey, I import this product. I want to resell it. Or I have a friend who has a business and stuff. So we don't work with those folks. But
so I can't sell iPhone cases there.
Couldn't sell iPhone cases here. Well, if you were a woodworker who's making your own, that would work.
Okay.
But you'd have to be manufacturing it, right? So you'd have to be like making it yourself. We're pretty strict about that. So you're doing coffee. So we're going to look at your coffee business. We're going to be like, awesome. So Scott sources his beans from these people. Obviously, you're not growing them locally. We get that. But you're sourcing your green beans. You're roasting them yourself. You're packaging them yourself. He has his own label. He has all these different kinds of things. Yes, we want to look at him. Our next step is we'll have you submit some of your product for testing. In your case, we'd be like, we need to see a couple pictures to demonstrate that you are actually roasting this. So some pictures of your process. So we actually see what you're processing. And then give us what you want us to, let's look at your menu. And if you're going to say, I'm selling cold brew and coffee beans, I'd be great. Give us a sample of your cold brew and give us a bag of coffee beans. And then we will brew them as a group and we might bring in like a local coffee roaster that we work with or someone else who's neutral, and we'll assess your product and we'll sort of go around the room and we'll go, does this one just meet our qualifications? That's the first thing. Like, is this a quality product? Is this done responsibly? Is this what we want represented? The answer is yes. Then we ask the next question, which is great. Do we have room for this person in our market? And then that's the conversation we have. And so, go ahead.
A couple questions come out of that for me. So first off, you answered like when I joked about the iPhone cases, but so we're not bringing resellers in. They're selling, Portland Trailblazer t-shirts.
Exactly. No.
Okay. Cause you're not a Trailblazers fan, are you?
No. Okay, good. I'm not. I was actually going to go to their game tonight, but the tickets fell through. So not a Trailblazer, but no, I'm not. Right. Okay. Although the baseball team, I will be a fan. Of the baseball team.
I can allow that.
Yeah, I'm a big baseball.
I hope Portland gets a baseball team.
I think it'd be great.
I hope Portland. I'm a baseball
nut. Me too.
I love baseball. And Tampa Bay is probably going to be available.
Yeah.
Because they turned them down. They won't let them play half their games in Montreal. So,
I think
Tampa Bay might get the Tampa Bay Rays.
I mean, I think we'll take what we can get, right? And then you can start building that team there. You'll make it your own.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah, me too.
I just wish Seattle had a basketball team again, but we won't. Yeah. We're talking farmers markets, not my broken heart. So is there, are there, in the sense of guidelines, I mean, how many, how many coffee, companies
can you have those kinds of things? So this is where the science and the art of a farmer's market sort of
intersect.
This is your intersection here. And so I don't believe, this is Jordan's perspective on this, and as executive director I get to kind of like cast this vision a little bit for the organization, but I inherently am a capitalist and don't believe that that people should have necessarily exclusivity to a specific product. So just because that was a big part of farmers markets for a long time. Like our board was all vendors. And so they'd be like, I'm the coffee vendor. So no one else can sell coffee here.
Gotcha.
And that might be okay if your product is awesome and you can actually serve every customer widely and provide a really good representation and you're always at the market. But what happens is that doesn't happen, right? So that guy decides not to come to the market, or he decides to sort of take every weekend off, every other weekend off, and which is totally fine. You got to have a life. You got to run your business. So I'm not going to tell you how to run your business. But what that means is that our shoppers don't get to
coffee.
Unless you're there, and to allow one vendor to control that for our entire thing, because that's at that point it affects the market because it's a customer experience. And so we want to make sure we have a well-rounded, good shopping experience. Also, and vendors don't like to hear this, but the very fact of the matter is, having a little healthy competition in the market is good for everyone. It's not, I'm not trying to make them compete hard with each other, but it keeps you on your toes. And there are vendors who've been here for many, many years, and they're great. There's also vendors who've been here for a long time and have kind of been, sometimes will find themselves lulled into a bit of complacency. Mm-hmm. And it's great to not to shake them up, and I'm not trying to hurt their business, but it's great for people to always sort of be required to sort of think about ways to stay fresh and stay relevant to their customer base. And honestly, it keeps customers coming back to have new stuff. If you see the same thing every time in the same place every weekend, the market becomes a little stale. And so for all those reasons, I'm a big fan of some gradual turnover over time as vendors retire. We move on. We have many vendors who've gone on. We have vendors who've been coffee vendors who've gone on to open their own coffee shops and open their own tea shops and open their own restaurants and whatever else. And we celebrate that. We call that graduating from the market. We're like, great, you shouldn't be here forever. This is a launch pad. Spread your wings and fly on to bigger and better things. And we'll bring in the next one of you, and we'll give them the chance to do that in a couple of years as well. And so it's a bit of a philosophical discussion, but you also don't want six coffee vendors, right? So right now we have two at the market, and that's seems to be a really good number. Oftentimes what we'll do, so you'd be a perfect example. We'll continue your coffee example. You want to show up and do coffee. We're open Saturday, Sunday, and coffee vendors always are like, we want to do both days all the time, which is great. But what we'll just be is like, listen, we already got a guy here on Saturdays. How about you do Sundays? And that's just the conversation we have. Mm-hmm. And you start doing Sundays, and you start filling on those off days, and we go from there. So there's some ways to sort of navigate that.
Well, and I love the fact that you said, you know, graduate from the market. And I would like to come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But so you have the application process, and here's where, you know, it's not an exact science that you're going to have one coffee company for every 30 booths. Right. Let's just, you know, arbitrarily. And I agree with you about the healthy competition, because what I'm about to say is the polar opposite of a farmer's market. But when you look at any major intersection in a city where you see a fast food place on every corner, the reason they're there is because people know that they can go and get fast food there. Mm-hmm. They might want brand X today and brand Y next week. So, but that's good. So having in our example, a couple of coffee places, I think that is good.
Yeah. Totally. You know? And it's also, you know, we'll use our coffee vendors right now as an example. Not to speak, not that one's any better than the other, but they're different. You know, they actually do two different roasting techniques.
Okay.
Coffee nerds out there. And so there's different styles of roasts.
Yes, there is.
They source differently. And as a result of that, one of them is a much higher price point. It's a more premium, like single origin style coffee. And then another is a more, I want to call it generic, but it's a little more approachable, like coffee you would have. And as a result of that, he has turned his business, because he has a better price point, into serving like local offices who he'll sell them 2-pound bags or 3-pound bags of coffee. He'll do service at he'll bring coffee to their offices. He's built a whole industry around that, which is great for him. The other people who are selling coffee at twice the price per pound, but it's a more single origin, like source coffee, is serving a clientele that's looking for that specific type of coffee. And the fact of the matter is, those customers don't necessarily cross paths.
No, they
don't.
That's
fine. That's
just like, flower vendors that have different types of flowers,
exactly.
All that. So now I'm going to ask some questions that, you know, just because I'm just curious. Okay. Yeah. So putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
Try not to put you on the spot, but put you on the spot. Give me an example of Jordan's vendors that you admire at the market. Like, I'm not asking for specific names, like Bill's Beans, but who in that market? Yeah. You don't buy every, you don't shop all 120 booths, right? So
not necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah. If you were going to the market, and let's say for sake of conversation, because depending on when somebody listens to this, the market actually might be firing on every Saturday. Right now it's not. But if you were to go on the market on Saturday, what would you be looking at?
Yeah. So I do try to make an effort to buy something from a lot of our vendors. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of things that are being sold that are not marketed toward or targeted towards me.
Right.
But, you know, so there's like lots of like bath and body products and, you know, artisan stuff that I'm not necessarily into. But I definitely have probably bought and consumed everything that our food vendors sell. I'm a big food and I'm really into cooking. And so,
okay,
you know, I'm a big fan of those things. I also really find myself supporting it's not necessarily overtly a decision of mine, but I think this is the interesting thing about business. I really find myself supporting the vendors that have really like are doing a good job. Not to say all vendors don't do a good job, but there's just vendors who like work a little, who have really figured out like how to market it. And it's just like how to market their product, how to sell that product. And then, you know, for my case, I have personal relationships. I've been here, you know, for 12 years now. So I have personal relationships with a lot of these farmers. I've been there since they started. You know, we have a new, they've been in the market just a few years though, a beef vendor I mentioned. It's a husband and wife team. I actually knew his family, kind of their family growing up where I grew up in a small town east of here. But they were a dairy family, kind of getting out of the dairy business. And he had a full-time job, his professional job. His wife has a full-time professional job. But his passion was raising animals and being a responsible farmer. And so he started doing it part-time. As a result of the market, coming every day, building a clientele over time, being great at customer service, and having a great product, he had a really good job. He was an industrial job, traveled the country, and he quit his job, quit his full-time job, and he's a full-time farmer now. And it's really fun to watch that happen. And so I really have this like vested interest in this guy, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, I'm gonna buy beef from this guy, even though I don't need much beef, because I want to support the fact that this guy was able to quit his corporate job, his professional job, and like become a full-time farmer and support his family that way. We have a number of people who've done that, and I just think that's really great. We also have people who just, this is something that I think the people who shop in grocery stores are missing out on, is you really get like some really niche, like specialist, like people who are real experts at certain things. And it's really fun to do that. So we'll have like a cranberry vendor who like owns a cranberry bog, and you know, that's all he does. And you kind of get these great cranberries. We have an amazing family owned lamb farmer here, and they're just really responsible, super hardworking family. I love to buy from them, some great farmers. And then we obviously have lots of fun, you know, right now everyone's selling hot sauce. So lots of fun hot sauces and bakeries and that kind of stuff. So I mean, I spend so much money, Scott, at the farmer's market. It's just disgusting. But I will say, and I can say this with confidence, like there's definitely some things we don't have in our market that I'd love to have that a lot of markets don't have, like milk or like good cheeses. It's just the industry. That's not just our market. That's just the industry in general. That's a really hard industry right now. It has been for forever, both from a regulatory and financial perspective. And so we're seeing less and less of them at markets, which is a challenge. But So you'll find me going to the grocery store to get like a gallon of milk and to maybe buy some nice cheese on occasion.
Right. You'd rather do it from the market.
I'd totally rather do it from the market. That's about it. So like the conversation we'll have at the market, which is funny, is we'll be sitting there and someone will be like, oh, I went to the grocery store last night. And it was kind of weird because I hadn't been there in 2 months. And that's like the big perk. Like whenever we hire people, they're like, what's the biggest perk of work? Like, what's the best thing about working for a farmer's market? And we're like, you get a grocery shop while you're at work. you have to go to a grocery store. So it's great. And you eat really, really well.
I love that.
You eat really, really well.
So many of the questions I want to ask aren't to like have you single something out, but I'm going to paint a picture.
Okay.
I'm going to show up Saturday morning and you're going to spend some time with me, showing me around the market. And I forgot to grab something to eat. So first thing in the morning, what should I be trying at the Vancouver's farmers market? Is there something there that I should check out? Or was there something,
there's a couple options, but I usually run to one of our bakeries and grab like a nice healthy cinnamon roll or scone or something. That and a cup of coffee is my that's my market breakfast that I can like roll around the market with and kind of navigate. We also have a few folks who do like smoothies and that kind of stuff in the morning, you know, some juice vendors, that kind of stuff. They're using local food, which is great. So you get that high quality product there, but I don't tend to go the healthy route as much as I should. And I like a nice cup of black coffee and like a scone, and I'm ready to run the market.
All right. So now it's fast forward. It's lunchtime. What should I be trying at the market? Mm-hmm.
This is interesting discussion. So we have a lot of good hot food at the market. Especially in the last couple of years, we've added, we have like a new vendor who's Laotian. So it's slightly different, but definitely different than Vietnamese food, Thai food. So it's like this now this third category that you don't see a lot of unless you're like maybe in Seattle or parts of Portland that have specific restaurants that you seek out. But she's like, she has like her like family's recipes from like their village and like the mountains of Laos. And so really unique, fun food, that is just amazing. We have a new vendor who's Egyptian. So she does all Egyptian stews and like all kinds of crazy stuff. That's really, really fun. So there's some fun ethnic, like really like authentic foods that are coming from people that are like first generation, like from those countries and are bringing their recipes here. We really love to see that. So we also have a great Taiwanese vendor at the market. It's Taiwanese street food, which is, again, totally different. So I really am like, there's a really fun chance to sort of try some of the unique food at the market.
But I can tell you, I mean, look at me. It's obvious I don't miss meals, right?
That's great.
But I have never eaten Laotian, Egyptian, or Taiwanese, maybe. Food, but you know, no, I would never have... I've never tried those before. So that sounds amazing.
It's become one of my real favorites.
Really? So why? I mean, now we're going off the farmer's market thing, but what is it about it that you like?
Well, so there's two things I like about this vendor's product. One is they're brand new. They got a great story. They lost their home in one of the fires in Southern Oregon last year and lost everything and took the insurance money. And instead of rebuilding, decided to move to Vancouver and pursue their dream of starting a food business with their family's recipes. And so they're struggling, working hard to be young entrepreneurs. And it's really great to see that. The thing I really love about that, so I like that story and I want to support that.
Sure.
Also, they're just very passionate. And like the spices and the seasonings are things that you won't find in most food. And I didn't realize that until I'd had it. So it's just really fun. I think it's just hyper flavorful and bright and spicy and...
So does it have heat to it then?
Oh yeah. Yeah. They've done a good job of like offering levels for people. Like, you know, you have to be kind of like careful with that, but like, I mean, it's got a little kick to it and you can definitely make it a little spicier if you want. And it's just really flavorful stuff. You know, it's like, I have this debate. We have like hot sauce is really big right now. And I'm like, I don't mind spicy food, but I'm not like one of those guys who's like, let's see if I can burn my face off right now. Like I'm not one of those guys, but I do appreciate that specifically in some of like the Asian food that we get at the market, some of that culture, like there is a combination of like, it's not just hot, but it's deep and flavorful. So there's just, it's really robust. Again, we get this similarly with like the Egyptian food, which would be really, I mean, the more popular thing you've probably seen over here would be like Moroccan food. And it's going to look really similar to that in many ways. Of course they would say like, it's not similar at all, but I mean, there's going to be some semblances there and similar warm spices, really savory potato and beef and chicken and, you know, cardamom and cinnamon and clove and all those sort of like fun spices. It's pretty cool. So I don't see that food anywhere else in our community really. And it's great, to see that. It's actually been a problem. I mean, just to go off topic a little bit, but like we've had, not to speak ill, but like in the past and even still, we still will have some more, I guess what you would call like somewhat at times, somewhat more traditional Asian food. You'll see it somewhat Americanized. And understandably, that's a comfortable thing. It's what you'll see at most restaurants that you would go to as an American. But I've noticed that those vendors, like the flour vendors who are largely Hmong, which is a group from Southeast Asia, and it's where they're sort of where they hail from, and like them and some of our vendors would be sort of have their own menus, right? Like the secret menus.
Oh, gotcha.
And that's the food we all wanted. We'd see this food and we'd be like, where is this food coming from? And we'd try to buy it and they'd be like, no, we don't, what are you talking about? We don't sell you that food. And so it's like, but they'd be walking about these bowls of curry and these different soups and like rolls and sandwiches. And I'm just like, what in the world is this? I've got to have some of this. And they're like, oh, Americans don't want this. White people don't eat this food. And I'm like, no, I don't think you understand. They do. And it's actually been really hard to convince them to sort of cook the food that they would cook for their families. mm-hmm. with the recognition that actually that would, is exactly what we want to see in our market. We want you to cook authentic food that's real to you. Not, we don't want you to sell what you think people want to buy. We want you, people want to buy what you want to sell. It's sort of just the opposite here at a farmer's market. People want that experience. So to have some folks beginning to show up who are cooking and selling the stuff that they would eat as a family, that they mm-hmm. would eat for themselves, is a real fun change to some of the food in the market. So lots of good options for that. And then honestly, what happens, you have a couple of vendors who do things like hummus or whatever at the market, those types of dips do a really good job. That's a pretty common lunch for our staff because we're often on the go.
Right.
Grab a thing of hummus. We'll swing by one of our farmers, grab some fresh produce, grab some fresh radishes and some fresh carrots, whatever, go in our office, wash them up really quick, and then have ourselves a snack. And that's what we'll be eating.
The perks of the job sound pretty good.
Pretty great.
I gotta say.
You eat a lot. You find a lot of food. You get a lot of recipe testing, which is really fun. Vendors who are trying new products going, I don't know if this will work. Why don't you guys give this a shot? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's cool. That's part of it.
That's part of it. I'm looking at your vendor scholarship. Mm-hmm. Elaborate on that for me.
Yeah, so we started a foundation a couple of years ago called the Vancouver Farmers Circle Foundation. It's a separate nonprofit that exists to support food access work, which we should talk about a little bit before we go here, and then also vendor development. And so on the vendor side, we have a scholarship program. It really came into its own during COVID. We were able to move, I want to say something here, like $40,000 through that organization to vendors directly, because we had, down here we had COVID, we had COVID all year, but it really hit hard the early part of the year. And then we had fires. And so a lot of vendors, like we had a couple of vendors lose some properties. We definitely had a lot of smoke damage and produce was, you know, some animals suffered from that and produce was tainted as a result of that. And so we were able to do COVID relief grants and fire relief grants and rebuilding efforts for vendors. Okay. We were able to sort of address like natural disasters or things that happen that maybe get in the way of vendors. You know, we had a big windstorm come through a couple of years ago and take out a whole vendor's series of greenhouses, which is thousands of dollars. And we were able to drop a couple grand on that vendor to help him get his greenhouses back up and running and sooner and just kind of support them in that way. So we really want to be supporting of them in that way. We also want vendors to continue developing as a business, and we want them to have access to resources. So we do a lot of work with like local biz, like SCORE and the Small Business Development Centers, the SBA and Clark College here, these kind of things to help align them with mentors, to help them grow their business. And also we just do things like send them to conferences or pay for them to get organic certification. And little things we can do to help. Sometimes it's literally like $1,000 will completely change this vendor's business. You know, for $500 to $1,000, they can get a product that will help them get over the hump of getting their product organically certified, which will allow them to charge a slightly higher price or to get a more premium or to get their product into a restaurant or whatever the case may be. And if we can help them do that, then hopefully that endears them to our market and helps them be more successful here, which is at the end of the day, that's our goal, is to make them more successful.
Well, that's great that you're investing in your partners. I mean, they, you know, without 120 merchants on any given Saturday, your market's not as vibrant. Exactly. This is helping. That's fabulous. You mentioned access. What did you want to?
Yeah. So on the food access side, which is just, you know, we're all familiar with, there's a SNAP program, which is called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. More commonly, I think, people would know that as like food stamps is what that used to be called, a similar program. It now comes on a card that people can swipe and it works like a debit card and they get money put on there by the state and they can use it for different things. They can redeem them for food benefits here at the market. So they get them, they run them, get these tokens that they can then go and shop the market with like a currency and vendors return it to us to redeem it. So it's a way for folks, because individual vendors to get certified, to accept SNAP cards, to have, there's obviously a high level of security. You have to go through all the compliance efforts to do that. It's not like running a credit card. So as a result of that, we hold a license, we process all the SNAP transactions, and then we reimburse the vendors for them. And so we have a system to do that. And then last year, through a sort of a large grant, the statewide, we were able to offer a matching program. So we matched up to $40, dollar for dollar, with additional funds for fruits and vegetables. Wow. So we have these vouchers, these pictures of different products on them, and they can use. SNAP is good for, hopefully I get this right, because it's kind of a official thing, but like SNAP is essentially what you'd use in a grocery store. So you can't buy like hot food with it. You can't, you know, that kind of, you can't go buy beer or whatever with it, I don't think. But like you can buy any like main grocery item, obviously produce.
Sure.
bread.
So we say staples staple items,
like
if you will.
Yeah, okay. But you can also do things like bread and cheese and milk and meat and that kind of stuff. And then we offer this voucher that is good for fruits and vegetables, herbs, things like that. So we match dollar for dollar up to $40. And, you know, and then we also do, so we do that. We also participate in a program called the Farmers Market Nutrition Program, which is senior FMNP. And what it is through a federal program, but seniors will get these vouchers, these checks that they spend like cash in the market with farmers, mm-hmm. Washington State farmers. And then we do a couple of other things, but like total last year was over $300,000 in food assistance moved through our market.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty big. And over 3,000 customers in that category shopped at our market last year. So we do a lot of that. We rolled out a new program last year called Market Tours, where someone from our local extension office with WSU Extension and someone from the local school district who we hire, who's like a native speaker of a language. We are right now, we're doing tours in English, Spanish, and Russian. A nutritionist and an educator and one of these folks who's also an educator who speaks the language meets with these clients, and then we tour them through the market, introduce them to farmers in their native language, explain products to them, show them how to shop, teach them how to use their benefits to the market. And then we do like a challenge with them where they have to maybe give them free tokens and they have to go shop and then come back and share what they bought. And the nutritionist helps them come up with the recipes for the family. And then they can come back multiple times and get free tokens to continue shopping at the market as a family.
And that's fantastic.
So we do lots of programs like that to sort of provide, not just, obviously it's good because our farmers are getting more sales and getting access to those customers, but then, you know, we're trying to do what we can to make sure the market is accessible to all levels of people.
That's fantastic. On your main page, and like I told you before we hit record, I'm on my iPad.
Yeah.
I'm noticing, so two things, and I'm afraid to click on it because I'm afraid it'll take me off, but there's an order online for curbside pickup.
Yeah.
And there's the order your market box subscription.
Yeah. So during
they both sound really obvious, but help me out.
Yeah. So during COVID, we got shut down by the city. COVID officially, like the official date of like our stay at home order was our opening day of the market. And so the city shut us down and it was really hard to get reopened. Everyone, as you probably remember in early 2020, no one knew what was going on. Everyone was freaking out. It's probably not the best topic for this conversation, but like it was a pretty rough time for our market where the city was just kind of like, you can't be here, you can't do this. And in the meantime, grocery stores are running out of products. And I'm going, we have farmers who are just like throwing product away right now, who can't sell it anywhere. And so we finally found a way, we worked to get open. But in the meantime, we launched an online market. We ramped up, our staff pivoted. We started an online sales channel where vendors would drop off product to us. We would repackage it. People would buy it online and we'd repackage it and they'd come to the market and we'd drop it at their cars. And they just use a drive through where we drop it off. And we kept that going for the last 2 years. I'm not sure that we'll be doing it this coming year for that program. As more and more people are shopping at the market, it's becoming less and less needed. Although I continue to sort of see like opportunity in helping vendors move online as much as possible just to increase their exposure. Sure. So that's the online sales curbside pickup. And every Sunday, what happens is we put a walk-in cooler in our office, like in our basement. We put in a bunch of refrigerators and we have a whole, we hired up people to do this. And we have a big production line where we fill up boxes of food and then people come and they give us their name and order number and we run it out to them and drop it off at their car and move a lot of products through there that way. About $100,000 in sales last year for farms at that.
I think that's awesome.
It's great. It doesn't pay for itself, but it's a really great service and it's an interesting thing. The Market Box program is a really fun new program that we got a grant to do. And it's like a CSA. Are you familiar with the CSA model, which is where customers sort of pay for a subscription? Community Support and Agriculture is what it stands for. At a local farm, you pay up front for the year and then you get a weekly allotment. That's that way, but through the farmer's market. So you can pay for a share, either 10 or a 20-week share, and large or small, depending on your needs. And we have some add-on options like, you know, eggs and flowers and that kind of stuff for people who want to add those to their weekly box. And then every week, it's the same for everyone, but they show up and they call us and give us our name. And one of our staff or volunteers runs out a box of their allotment for the week. It's an assortment of Washington State produce and a couple other value-added products if they've purchased them from the market. Things like honey and cheese and eggs, that kind of stuff. And so you just pay for that up front and then you get it every week for 20 weeks at the market.
That's
yeah, wow. It's a cool program.
Very cool.
It's really great too for farmers because, as you can imagine, a big part of a farmer's market is you do all this work to build up your display and to harvest stuff. Once it's out of the ground, you got to sell it or throw it away. And so it's great that they know that, like, if we're doing, like, this year, we're probably going to do over 100 boxes, 100 subscriptions. And it's great to, you know, we're obviously going to, you know, it's great to know that, you know, this one farm is going to be like, I'm going to sell 100 bunches of radishes this week, right?
Yeah.
Which is, that's just a guaranteed sale for him. That's money in the bank. He can pull it out of the ground and drop it in a box and take it right to us. He doesn't have to worry about putting it in the sun or trying to hope this customer will buy it. He's got a guaranteed sale happening at the market that week.
So to respect your time, we'll wrap this up. Yeah. We could talk to you for a long time. Okay. So let me ask you a couple of questions, and then I want to ask you something about yourself. So what do you see? I mean, it's hard to predict with COVID or whatever we want to call it, but, you know, what do you see in the near future for the market? What do you think's on the horizon?
A lot of interesting things are on the horizon for us. So we are going to be facing some continued pressure, just to get the negative stuff out of the way up front, from a rapidly growing city that is going to start squeezing us from a real estate and just occupancy perspective. And so we've got to sort of address that and find some solutions there. That's the big challenge we're facing in the next couple of years. Okay. We're also facing a real desire from our community and from some of our vendors, and hopefully a few more this year, to go year round. Right now we're March through December. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that by 2023, we'll be 12 months out of the year.
Oh,
okay. During the off season, like during the December, you know, November, December, January, February, we'd just be like one day a week instead of two. And then we'll go back to sort of a more full market during our peak season.
Okay.
So I think you're going to see in the future, we're going to see a year-round market. We're probably going to see at least one more midweek market. So we're hoping to have at least four selling days a week offered throughout our city. And then we've got a couple of fun projects on the way. I'd really like to find a way to get the market either off of a city street or into a more like formal space, potentially even a covered space that would allow it to operate on a year-round basis a little more easily for customers and vendors. Okay. And then there is an area of sort of the most exciting area to me of our city is on a place called Fourth Plain Boulevard, which is a fascinating sector of our community in that it's largely sort of the Latinx and Asian American and other sort of BIPOC communities neighborhoods, not exclusively, but that's a large part of this. It's sort of a long, narrow corridor. Mm-hmm. There's also this, as a side, this interesting thing in Washington State called the cottage food law permit. So if you want to sell like a packaged food or, you know, something like that, traditionally you need to go through like a health department process of getting your kitchen, going to a commercial kitchen and going to this whole formal expensive process. This allows you, if you're a micro business, to do like up to $50,000 of sales out of your home if you get your home kitchen certified. So okay. It's this interesting thing. Well, so this is an opportunity for young, you know, small entrepreneurs to kind of just get started, dip their toe in the water. Fourth Plain has the highest percentage of cottage food law permits per capita in our region. So all these people have this entrepreneurship around food in this region. We would like to see an international market there that's for that community, run by that community, that really supports what they're doing. So there's some city initiatives happening there to really sort of invigorate and support that community in a way that sort of honors them. And we want to be part of that. So I think we're hoping to have an international market in that area in the future. So there's a lot of fun things happening for us.
All right. So let's talk about you.
What do you want to
know? You mentioned that you grew up, you grew up in Vancouver area?
I did. I was actually born right up the street from my office. moved away for a while. And then I sort of have landed back here as an adult.
So from a career path, how does one end up in farmer's market?
Yeah, never on employment. Purpose. I'll tell you that right now. Okay. No one does. It's a really interesting career path. It's an interesting season, in my life, but my career path is interesting. In short, I went to WSU, I'm a Cougar, and I studied history and business, got 2 degrees there. And so, I was really interested in working in business, and specifically entrepreneurship was my focus. So right after college, I got a job in finance, working with small businesses like angel investors, doing business plans and operations for our investments. So I worked with a lot of startups. Interesting enough, some in the agriculture and food sector, but also in the manufacturing and some basic tech, nothing super high tech, but a lot of manufacturing technology. And so I got into that kind of sector for a while. But that was during the recession and things were pretty rough. And so couldn't get a steady paycheck and ended up getting laid off and everyone was losing jobs and no one was investing at the time. And so I went from there into the fire service. And so I became a firefighter and an EMT. I was a firefighter and EMT for actually 15 years. Worked for the Forest Service for a while as a wildland firefighter. And then I was in here in town at a structural fire department and worked on an ambulance. And I did that for a long time. It was thought that it was the career I wanted and I just didn't ever, I never really enjoyed it that much. It was fine, but got a little boring to be perfectly honest with you. Kind of rote. And so I was working for the city of Washougal, a small city east of here, working in their city manager's office, doing some downtown development work, one of the jobs I had there was working with the farmer's market, running the farmer's market in addition to some other programs. And as that job was kind of coming to an end, Vancouver reached out to me and wanted me to come work here. And I said no, because I didn't want to work in a farmer's market. I didn't want to have weekends. I didn't want to work weekends. I didn't want the 6 a.m, you know, wake up, you know, having to be at the market all the day at time. And so I said no, and they said, okay. And I kept looking for a new job and nothing came up. So they came back again and I was like, well, I'll come talk to you. And I ended up taking a 30-day job here on a contract to do some operations work for them. It was a really small organization at the time. It was definitely the largest market still in the area, but struggling in some ways with a lot of internal problems. And so addressed some operational things. And then through a lot of internal drama, there's a lot of farmers markets have drama out there. The staff was no longer employed here except for myself. And I became sort of the lone manager left at the market. And so I stuck around to kind of help them transition. And I was like, yeah, I'll stick around and help you guys transition to a new leadership team. And it turns out that I was that new leadership team. And so it started with me and one part-time employee. Now we're up to 14. And so just been growing the business ever since. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm not your traditional farmer's market manager, I guess, whatever that means. Nor do I have a long history of working in the food sector or working like in the farm and food justice world. Like a lot of people, that is a career path that a lot of people pursue. That's not what got me here. My passion around this has been around being really passionate about vibrant, strong communities. Part of my growing up time was spent in Asia and living in Barcelona. And I've traveled extensively throughout Europe, a little bit in Asia, but definitely throughout Europe. And I mean, it's when Howard Schultz tells the story of going to Italy, sort of gave him sort of the impetus behind starting the Starbucks, sort of that idea of like a cafe culture. I actually really understand the impetus behind it. I really get that, right? Because I spent a lot of time in parts of Italy and parts of, I mean, all over Europe, actually, shopping at markets and seeing the value of communities who gather daily at their local market, supporting local makers, local producers, eating together as a friends and family, and like the culture that's part of that. I'm really passionate about vibrant cities and vibrant communities and vibrant public spaces. The markets gives me a chance to dabble in that. And I'm really passionate about entrepreneurship. And I love seeing people pursue their dreams and create something from nothing and support their families. And the market has been able to allow me to sort of work in both of those sectors and sort of support those two things, which is something I'm pretty passionate about.
That's wonderful. So I typically ask my guests this question, and I didn't know if I would ask it of you, but I'm going to. You obviously, earlier you mentioned cinnamon roll, black coffee. So we're going to get along just fine. I love coffee.
Yeah, me too.
I love coffee. So tell me a place in Vancouver that I need to go to check out for coffee. I know I'm putting you on the spot. You can tell me more than one. I'll take more than one.
I can give you three.
Perfect.
Our neighbor to here by the market is a place called Cafe X Coffee. Great local roaster. The two places I go there on definitely frequently, but the two places I go a lot that I just have good connections with are a place called Relevant Coffee. It's a really phenomenal roaster here in Vancouver. Very likely you might be able to get his beans. He's starting to distribute. So I wouldn't surprise me if you can find his beans in the Natchez area.
Had him before. Yeah.
You had Relevant before? Yeah. Did you like it? Was it okay?
I did. Yeah. I did.
He's a good job. Yes. And a new guy who's been around roasting sort of under the radar and has just opened a shop a few months ago here in Vancouver is a business by the name of Terrain Coffee. Okay. And new young business owners, this guy named Marty, and it's really, really special stuff. He's doing a really, really good job. He's working directly with a lot of farmers. Actually, all three of these coffee roasters like know and work with, they're in South America buying beans and knowing local farmers in that area. So it's pretty great.
The first one, say that name again.
Cafiex. Cafiex is K-A-F-I-E-X.
I can never pronounce that.
Have you had it?
I've been
there. Yeah.
And she...
Sadie, with the owner, is from Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk to her. So and she did a siphon press for me.
Yeah.
With the halogen light for the heat source. Yeah. And it was like some steampunk looking coffee.
It's a great way to make coffee.
It's a great way to make coffee. Yeah, that's a nice shop that she has.
Yeah, they've opened a second location on our new waterfront. So they have two locations in Vancouver now. They're doing great.
That's great.
All three of those guys are sort of hitting different segments of our population, mm-hmm. and they're just doing a great job.
That's wonderful.
Coffee and breweries are really taking off in Vancouver.
Big time. Yeah, I don't drink beer anymore because it just doesn't like me. I can have one and it feels like I had. Yeah.
I don't understand because I am single-handedly keeping our industry afloat here in Vancouver.
Okay, good for you.
Well, yeah, you got to do what you got to do. You got to support.
I feel that you're falling on your sword to help the community. But let's give me a couple of breweries. What's going on in the breweries?
Man, so many good breweries. The one I just love the most is a brewery called Fortside in Vancouver. It's sort of in central Vancouver, out of our downtown. Fort being Fort Vancouver, sort of a famous historical fort downtown Vancouver, and a great national park here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of amazing breweries in Vancouver, but he is doing really creative stuff. He's got a whole line of beers now that he is, instead of using commercial yeast, he's harvesting wild yeast from organic wine grapes, and then propagating that to use in his beer making process. So he's doing some really fun beers, especially sours, with wild harvested organic, yeast from different grapes. He just continues to produce like really profound, really unique. He's really focused on a high quality guy. There's also a couple great ones. Trapdoor Brewing and Lewitt Downtown are both like classic downtown breweries. They're doing a great job with West and East Coast IPAs. And then what we're seeing right now, an emerging trend in the region, which I think is we're going to see in the beer scene, is Victor 23 is like my neighborhood bar. It's my neighborhood brewery. It's a really fun one. Victor 23 is the route that DB Cooper's flight took. it's a DB Cooper themed brewery.
I love
it. Which is really fun. My graduate thesis for my history degree was on DB Cooper. And so sort of like the history of criminals as social heroes. And so it's a DB Cooper themed bar, great beer. But what it is, interestingly, is it's in a neighborhood. It's in a small spot in a neighborhood. And there's this emerging trend in our city and in Portland as well, where the places to be, the really fun spots are truly neighborhood bars. The idea there is like people know you, you're walking to it. It's serving the people in that community. They're not distributing a ton. It's not a tourist destination. It's not giant. It's not something that was going to feed a whole crowd, but just great local food, good local beer. It's just a spot to gather with your friends. And that's where a lot of stuff goes down here in Vancouver. So we have a number of those around our town. I'm a big fan of like that smaller communal feel. So
that's awesome. All right. Last question.
Great.
What didn't I ask you that I should have?
Great question. I always ask this to job interview candidates, and it's a hard one to be on the receiving end of. What didn't you ask me? You know, we did a pretty good job about this. I think if there's one thing that I really like to share about farmers markets, I think is often forgotten. It's like, you know, when people look at a farmers market, regardless of where it's at, they see a couple, vinyl tents and that are popped up, and they see, some folks selling vegetables or products, and that's really what they see. That's all they see. What I think is we need to do a better job of telling the story of, both locally and nationally, is that there is really thriving business taking place here, and there is millions and millions of dollars moving through Washington State farmers markets. I mean, probably over $100 million moving through Washington State farmers markets every year when you think about it. And maybe even more. And nationally, it's a pretty big industry. It's supporting small farms that just do not are really struggling right now as the land prices are going up, distribution models are changing. It's really hurting small American farms, small local makers. And markets are just, I just feel like they are so vital for creating a vibrant way for small businesses to connect with customers. And I think many people are like, oh yeah, it's just a little market. We always get this thing, oh, just move it a few blocks. It's in the way. Or, oh, just put your, move your tents tomorrow and put them here. And they don't realize like we're really like to have a really long-term successful market requires a long-term commitment. And there's just some vibrant, cool things happening at these places. We need to do a better job of telling that story and continue to reiterate that story to people because we're sort of understated. Our farmers in general are bad at storytelling. We're kind of just like, we're quiet, hardworking people who just want to sort of do that, right? And I respect that. But at the same time, I see farmers markets all over sort of getting shoved around and pushed around by more pressing interests, if you will, of the powers that be. And I just continue to think like, you guys don't realize how valuable the things are that are taking place here. And some of them are quantifiable and some of them are intangible, but regardless, like they are extremely important and they are not built overnight. And so these things take long-term growth and they take lots of TLC to keep them going. And I just think that communities are better for them.
Well said.
Thank you.
And I think on that we will close. And I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me today and share the story.
Likewise, Scott, I appreciate your time.
And I want to check out that DB Cooper bar, but
yeah, actually, come to town, we'll check it out.
That sounds like a cool theme. I mean, but your market, before we talked, I had no idea that the Vancouver market was as large as it is. And,
I hope you get a chance. I hope you get a chance to talk to a few other markets in the state. I think people, it's really important work you're doing here. I think people would really be surprised at the idea that farmers markets are not just a few guys who pop up tents on the weekends and then go home, but there's a whole industry taking place behind the scenes and it's supporting a lot of things in our community, not just the farmer. There's a lot of stuff happening at these markets. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Scott.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast.